Welcome to the Martinus Cosmology Podcast. We are broadcasting to you today on the 7th of February from the Martinus Institute in Copenhagen. My name is Mary McGovern and I'm your host for today. My guest today is Ole Terkelsen. Ole has a background as a chemical engineer and a biologist, and he's also a very experienced lecturer on Martinus cosmology. He's been giving lectures in, how many is it, 6 different languages, I think, since 1980. And he's the author of 2 books on Martinus cosmology, Martinus Darwin and Intelligent Design, A New Theory of Evolution. And the other one, Ole, what was that called?
It is called Martinus and the New World Morality.
Yes, and Ole, you've been traveling around these last couple of weeks giving a lecture entitled God, the Universe and Science. And in that lecture, you talk about what Martinus cosmology is, or what cosmology is. Would you like to elaborate on that?
First, I would like to tell that I gave some lectures in the United States in 1984, and I wrote letters to a lot of universities to tell that I would like to give a lecture. And very often, I got an answer from the Department of Astronomy. So apparently, when you talk about cosmology today, many people think it's about the Big Bang theory. But Martinus cosmology is not the Big Bang theory. And that is what I try to explain in my lecture entitled God, the Universe and Science. And Martinus, he has made a science, but it is a spiritual science. So then there is the natural science and the spiritual science. And people in the natural science normally says, if you cannot weigh and measure or detect a thing, it doesn't exist. And it is they make a research on particles and physical matter. But Martinus talks about spiritual science. And also in the 1800s, in Germany, they talked about Geisteswissenschaft. And this is a German word that has entered the English language, but it means that it is spiritual science. And in spiritual science, you make a research in the expressions of life and not only physical matter. But Martinus, he has sort of made a science on religion, a science on God, and also a science on expressions of life, and not only on particles and physical matter.
So, Ole, what is Martinus' concept of God?
Well, to put it very short, God is everything. Everything that exists is God, and God is everything that exists. In Islam and Judaism and Christianity, you have a difference between God and the creation of God. So in that way, there are sort of 2 parts in the world. The part created by God and God itself. But to Martinus, every living being is a living cell in the body of God. So it is an all-embracing concept of God. And this means that if you take everything that exists, you will get a unity. For example, if you say there is God who is fighting against the devil, and you would take what is the sum of everything that exists, and then you would come up with that there is a part that belongs to God and another part that belongs to the devil. So when you take the totality, you have a duality. But to Martinus, you only have one unity. Everything that exists makes out one unity. And to me, it's also interesting as a scientist, because I've been teaching at high school and university in chemistry and physics. And Martinus thinks that the spiritual world is an electric magnetic world. Sometimes Martinus says the spiritual world is an electric world, and sometimes he says an electric magnetic world. You have electrical fields and magnetic fields, and they stretch all over in the whole universe. So if you would take the sum of all consciousnesses existing in the world, you would get one big electrical field. And that means if you take the sum of all consciousness that exists in the universe, you will get one consciousness. And Martinus, he had a big initiation, a big revelation when he was 30 years old in 1921. And Then he talked about the white baptism of fire and the golden baptism of fire. And in the golden baptism of fire, he experienced that the house disappeared, his body disappeared. And at the end, he was only in a golden aura, a golden glory. And he said that he felt that in this aura, the consciousness of all living beings melted together to one consciousness. And he felt this is God's consciousness. And I think that's a very interesting definition of God's consciousness, that it is there where all living beings are melting together in one consciousness.
So would you say that Martinus cosmology is a science of God's consciousness?
Yes, that was a good way to put it. I wish I had said it that way. So Martinus spiritual science is a research in expressions of life. And we live in an ocean of movements. If you go to the atoms and electrons, they are moving in microcosmos. Here in mesocosmos, animals and human beings are moving. Planets, solar systems, galaxies, the whole universe, everything is moving. So we are standing face to face to an ocean of movements. But what are we witnessing when we see this ocean of movements? And Martinus put it in a biblical way, what we witness when we are looking at all existing movements, that is, God creates consciousness. And one of the things in Martinus cosmology that have had the biggest importance for me, that is that Martinus talks about the direct speech of life. Life is speaking to us. The universe is speaking to us, or God is speaking to us. And I think it's no coincidence that Martinus entitled his main work, Livets Bog, the Book of Life, in 7 volumes, 3,000 pages. It is a grammar in order to learn to understand the direct speech of life. If I get a text written in Arabian, Chinese, Japanese, I can see the printed letters, but I do not understand anything. And in the same way, I am sort of an illiterate when you show me a Chinese text. And then Martinus claims that when materialists that believe in physical matter and they are atheists, they are like illiterates face to face with the direct speech of life. But if you have a text written in Chinese and one person can read the text and another person can't read it, they can see exactly the same letters, but it makes sense to one of them and not to the other. And for many people, life is an absurd theater. There is no meaning in life. They are sort of illiterates face to face with the direct speech of life. But Martinus' collected works, his cosmology, and especially his main work, Livets Bog, the Book of Life, can help you to understand the direct speech of life. And I have noted that two or three places he uses the same four words to describe the direct speech of life. The direct speech of life is an expression for teaching and upbringing, but also love and entertainment. Martinus talks about the purpose of the physical world. And the purpose of the physical world is evolution. And Martinus talks about an evolution from minerals to plants to animals to human beings on Earth today and to perfect human beings. So the purpose of the physical world is a development of a cosmic consciousness, a perfect consciousness. And it starts, as I said, with minerals, plants, animals, and human beings. And in the last 10 years, when I lived in Copenhagen, where Martinus gave very few lectures, but when he had birthday, he gave a lecture in August. And I noted that in several of these lectures, he said, one of the most important sentences in the Bible is where you let God say, let us create a human being in my picture, in my likeness.
Let us create God's man in God's image after his likeness.
That was exactly what I wanted to say. And why is that such a big word? Because it's a biblical explanation of the same thing, that actually there is a sense of meaning in the physical world. You could put it that way. Evolution is the sense of the physical world. And I have written this book, Martinus, Darwin and Intelligent Design. And I have discussed evolution with a lot of scientific people, biologists, chemists, and so on. And they think it's very religious to think that the evolution has a purpose, that there is a plan behind the evolution, that the evolution has a goal. So they think that's totally religious. The evolution is controlled by chance. There are so-called mutations, that is wrong copies of the DNA molecules, and then there is the survival of the fittest. But when you don't know what changes would come up, then you cannot predict the direction of the evolution. So that's a big difference. But Martino thinks that the evolution is continuous and totally conscious.
Ole, another way of describing Martino's cosmology is it's a theory of everything. Do you have any comment on that?
Well, that's an expression I have from the physicist, the high energy physicists and atomic physicists. And they are trying to find one formula that can describe all forces in natural science. And today they work with four forces. It is the strong nuclear forces, the weak nuclear forces, the electromagnetic forces, and the gravitation. And Einstein, he published his theories of relativity when he was quite young. And they say that the last half of his life he tried to put all the forces to one formula. And nowadays we have this string theory, and they are trying also to find this one formula that can describe the four different natural forces, and they are still looking for it. And there was a big conference in Copenhagen 10 years ago, and they wrote in the paper they were searching for the theory of everything. And when I read that in the newspaper, I thought, oh, Martinus is the theory of everything. Because Martinus, he works with eternity and infinity. He talks about life in mesocosmos, but he also claims that the organs are living beings, the cells are living beings, the molecules, the atoms, the electrons, and it goes on forever in microcosmos. And he also uses the number system as a symbol. If you said I as an organism, I'm one, then the organs would be 0.1, the cells would be 0.01, and the molecules would be 0.001. And then you can go on for eternity downwards in microcosmos. You will never stop. And you could say, if I'm one, then planet Earth is a living being. That's 10. The solar system is 100. The galaxy, the Milky Way, is 1,000. And the group of galaxies, the local group of galaxies, that is 10,000 and so on. So there is no limits in space to Martinus, neither in microcosmos nor in macrocosmos. And in the Big Bang model, they say that the universe was created at time t equals zero. And what was before t zero? And they say time zero. They say it's an irrelevant question because time didn't exist. So they have a start, but Martinus thinks that neither space or time have had a begin or will have an end. So also Martinus, he says that basic in Martinus cosmology is you cannot create something from nothing. And that means you cannot make energy out of nothing. The closest I get to it in natural science, that is that they say the energy is constant. And if the energy is constant, you cannot make energy out of nothing, and you cannot put anything, and you cannot annihilate energy. So in the same way, Martinus says, you cannot create life of something dead. and something that is living cannot be dead. So he says it's the same impossible to create energy of nothing as it is to create life from something dead.
So the very fact that we are alive and we experience life is actually proof of eternal life.
Well, to me, it is a proof if you just accept this idea that nothing can be, that anything cannot be created from nothing. And I've been thinking about Martinus, what is the basic axiom? Sometimes when you have to start a philosophical system, you have to start somewhere. And I think in the bottom of everything, that is the law of cause and effect, or this that you cannot create anything out of nothing. And that means that the energy is eternally existing, because it's impossible to make energy out of nothing. And we can see that life is existing, but you cannot create life of something dead. So if you accept the law of cause and effect, and this sentence that you cannot create anything from nothing, then it is a proof for eternal life and also for eternal existence of energy. In a way, I would say in physics, they don't use the word eternal. But if you say the sum of energy is constant, with other words, you have said the energy is eternal. And it's the backbone in the whole Martinus cosmology, that is eternity. And he has also called his works for the eternal world picture.
But this idea of eternity and infinity, it contrasts with people's experience of being born at a particular time and dying at a particular time. So how do we experience eternal life?
Well, the big problem is that we must all die, that we have a physical body and we can see that all the physical bodies are dying. Then the problem is, what is consciousness and where is consciousness located? And natural science says that consciousness can only exist in a living body with biochemical reaction and physiology. When the physical body doesn't exist, doesn't work any longer, there is no consciousness. I can tell that in November, 2 months ago, we had a conference here at the Martinus Institute, and there was a famous Dutch scientist called Pim van Lommel, and he gave a lecture on non-local consciousness. And what I remember from his talk was, I should say he is a cardiologist, and he has written a book about near-death experiences, and he was very convinced that consciousness can exist without the body. And that's the big difference, that natural science says that consciousness cannot exist without a physical body. But he said one of his patients who have had a near-death experience wrote him a letter. And in this letter, the patient wrote, "I can live without my body, but my body can apparently not live without me." And I have been teaching physics about electric and magnetic fields. So I think it's quite logical, just because the biochemical and physiological reactions in the body are stopping, why should the magnetic and electric field stop to exist? But that's the biggest problem, that they think that it is the physical body that creates consciousness. And they think that it is the physical matter that produces consciousness. And there are two big problems. Now I will take that with the brain. So natural science thinks that it is the physical brain that produces consciousness. And you can put electrodes on the head, and if you are trying to speak English or French, there are some centers that are active. If you think about sex or about food, other centers are active. And then they conclude that it is these parts of the brain that have produced consciousness or produced thoughts. But that is not proof. They can say, if they are very scientific, that there is a relation, there is a correlation between the thoughts and the centers that are active, but they have not proved cause and effect. They have not proved that the reactions in the physical brain are the cause to the consciousness. And to Martinus, the physical brain is only an antenna. So your consciousness, when you are thinking, you are doing that in electric and magnetic fields. So I love this analogy when you're looking on the television. And maybe if you are a materialistic researcher, you might want to find out where is the television program produced. And then you examine the television set, and then you see there is an antenna, and you follow a cable, and then you follow it to the antenna. And then there's just the empty air. And then your conclusion is the antenna has produced a program, and you put some electrodes and you can measure some movements, electrical currents in the antenna. And then your conclusion is the antenna has produced the television program, but it is in the broadcasting house that produced it and sent it out. So that gives a total another angle. So I think the closest you get to that in the research, that is the near-death experiences. Because now when people have a cardiac arrest, you can bring them alive again, and then they can tell what they have experienced. And in some cases, the heart didn't work, the brain didn't work, but anyway, they could describe what passed in the hospital and they have experiences in that period. So that shows that the consciousness is a non-local phenomenon. So I guess that's quite interesting. But to Martinus, he don't use that kind of proof. It's more in a logical way.
So what is Martinus's proof?
Martinus' proof is the law of cause and effect. And his proof is that nothing, you cannot create anything from nothing. That's sort of his proof. What his proof, or what should I say, that is what is important to understand. If you try to understand Martinus' spiritual science, you have to divide things into two groups, and that is created things and eternal things. Every created thing has a begin and an end. And when a created thing is created, there is a cause. Why, now we are sitting in this house, why does the house exist? Because somebody had created it. So there is a cause to the creation of all created things. But if you, for example, say energy is constant, energy is an eternal phenomenon, why does energy exist? Well, there is no cause to the existence of eternal things. They just simply exists. And for example, natural science says the universe started by the Big Bang explosion. And they say that life was created here on planet Earth 4 billion years ago by chance. And I have studied biochemistry and biology, and I've asked so many colleagues, how come the dead matter turned into matter with consciousness? And they have still not been able to explain what happened when life came around. But how can Martinus explain any more? Energy exists. You cannot make energy out of nothing. In the same way, life is existing, and you cannot create life from something dead. So that is when Martinus works with eternal phenomena. You cannot prove it. You can just see that they are eternally existing. So how should you be able to prove the cause to a thing that has no cause? And that is also a philosophical problem. Martinus is also talking about the first cause, or the causeless cause. And as I said before, every created thing has a cause. And natural science only work with created things. And for that reason, they cannot grasp, they cannot enter the philosophical world of Martinus, because he's working with a causeless cause. And there is no cause to the existence of life. Life is eternally existing. There is no cause to the existence of energy. It is eternally existing.
He talks about the living being having a triune structure with an I and a creative ability and the creation. where this I is the cause or the causeless cause behind everything. Do you have anything to say about that?
Yeah, I would like to say that talking about the theory of everything, I mentioned that Martinus, he works with time and space, and he works with everything that exists in time and space. And that would be everything that exists to the physicists. But Martinus is also talking about something outside time and space. We live in an ocean of movements, but there is something that moves. Martinus also says there is a difference between an experience and that what are having the experience. So X1, the self, that is the divine something that exists. And it is the sum of everything that exists. And Martinus explains that every experience is based on contrasts. You can feel it's cold today because you have experienced heat. You can say that today I'm alone because you have had company. You can say I'm happy today because you know you've been unhappy. So the question is, if you collect all contrast in one place, what would it be? For example, if you take all positive numbers and all negative numbers, what would the result be? Zero. But you have taken all the numbers. And if you take all positive electrical charges and all negative electrical charges, what would the sum be? That would also be zero. If you take all north poles and south poles, all magnetic forces, what would the result be? That would also be zero. And if you would try to imagine, where are we moving? Where is the universe moving? There are movements upwards, downwards, east, west, north, south. Where do you think? And I guess most people would say we're not moving anywhere because they are the same movement in all directions. So if you take all of them, and also like Martinus' analogy with the white light, the sunlight, you would say it is colorless. But on the contrary, it is containing all colors. You can, if you have a prism and you can divide the white light in all colors. So Martinus is working with the divine something that just exists. And that is what he calls X1, the self, the I. And it is the sum of everything that exists. But you cannot experience everything that exists in one experience. You can experience one contrast on the cost of the other contrast. You cannot be happy and unhappy at the same time. You cannot be positive and negative at the same time. So it's sort of rather philosophical, but it is the basis of Martinus' eternal world picture. And he also, mentioned this this initiation, the golden baptism of fire. And he said that he'd also described this in the sixth volume, this golden aura, this golden glory. He also called it the mystery of the golden threads. He said sort of the whole created world, the world with physical movements and with time, his body, the house, everything disappeared. At the end, he was only in this electrical field, and the only thing that you could see was this golden light, and it was golden threads that moved in one end, and in an artistic way, they turned into the stillness where there were no movements. And he also said that these threads disappeared behind the horizon of sensing. And it is so very difficult to understand, but you have to understand the difference between what exists and what we can sense. And he says that this X1 cannot be sensed because it cannot be experienced because it's the sum of everything that exists. And he also said these golden threads disappeared behind the horizon of experience. They are existing, but they cannot be experienced. So that's Martinus' logical thought, that you cannot experience everything at one time. But when you take the sum of everything, it is a kind of zero in one way, but it contains everything. And in this X1, there is no time and no space when you talk about infinity and eternity. In a way, in infinity, it is not a big distance. Also, or eternity, it's not a long time. It is a contrast to time and to size. And sometimes I try to imagine that I am in a white cloud. There is no contrast. There are no differences in density, in color, in temperature. It's absolutely the same in all directions. There's no movements. Then what would you experience? I think you could experience nothing, because there's no contrast, there's no difference. So it's also very difficult to understand this divine something that exists, that contains all contrast. In a way, it is everything that exists, but you cannot experience it. It can only be experienced when it is divided. And then he talks about this creative power and the power of experience, that you can divide the divine something into its contrast. And this is what he calls the creative power, or X2. So we have X1, the divine something that contains everything that exists, but it can be divided out in the six basic energies, and also be divided into the six realms or the six kingdoms of the universe. And then X3 is the world of movements. Only in X3 you have this law of cause and effect, and where you have all your measurements. It is an ocean of movements. And as I said in the beginning, it is so fascinating that it might seem chaotic, that there are movements in atoms and electrons, in mesocosmos, in macrocosmos. You are facing an enormous ocean of movements. And what is the meaning? What's the sense? And Martinus can say the sense is evolution, that is creation of cosmic consciousness, or that is God creates consciousness through all these. And that is what Martinus cosmology is about. That is to understand the meaning and the plan behind the movement. Here is a cup, here is a pencil. And then Martinus uses this expression that there is an idea incarnated in the cup. There is an idea incarnated in the pencil. So in everything created by human beings, there is an idea that is created, but you cannot see the idea. You can bring it to a laboratory, and they can weigh length, weight, and all kind of different physical measurements, but you cannot measure the idea. So Martinus cosmology is making a research in plans, ideas, fulfillment of desires and wishes, and you cannot measure it. And that's a big difference between natural science and spiritual science. So actually, the physical science is only a fragment of the cosmology. And Martinus says, as long as they work within their own field, working with physical matter, they are sovereign. It's completely correct what they're saying. But then they also start to talk about life. Plans, ideas doesn't exist because we can't measure it. Then they go outside the borders of their work field. They have defined a certain scientific method, and within that they're sovereign. But they are talking about things that are outside, and because the technical advances has been so enormous, so they think that everything they are right.
But you could say that science recognizes what it can measure, and perhaps not what it can't measure. But at the same time, the ability to measure things changes, so we get more and more refined measuring instruments of all sorts. So perhaps science could be open to the idea that there are things that can be sensed that they can't sense at the moment, because they experience that they create new means of sensing.
No, it's so that now, first science started to talk about atoms, and then electrons, and then quarks and bosons and leptons and so on. And they have this accelerator, big cruncher. So they can still detect smaller and smaller particles, but it's in the same area. Now there's a particle, now there's an even smaller particle, now there's an even smaller particle. But that is still a research in matter and particles. What is the meaning of the movements, and what is the plans, what is So I would say that what is important in Martinus cosmology, that is to find the driving force behind the evolution. And that is fulfillment of wishes and desires. In the Darwinism, they say it's a survival of the fittest, but in a way they have not explained why do they want to survive. And Martinus say it's a consequence of that all living beings are eternal living and they have an eternal primordial desire. So some of the success of Darwin theory is that they, without knowing it, have put an eternal factor into their theory, and that is an eternal primordial desire. The eternal living being wants for eternity to experience something. And the driving force is fulfillment of wishes and desires. And in the volume 2 of Livets Bog, Martinus talks about thoughts. All thoughts are children of the desire. And if I'm hungry, what I'm thinking of, getting something to eat. If I'm thirsty, I'm thinking of getting something to drink. And if I'm lonely, I'm looking for company. So I think it's also very positive. Instead of the world is meaningless and everything takes place by chance, it's good to know that all wishes and all desires will be fulfilled in the long run. And he also talks about will. And he says will, that is the ability of the living being to control the fulfillment of its wishes and desires. So we are putting our will into the fulfillment of our desires. And then Martinus says, you can only experience one thing on the background of the contrast. So when you are satiated with one contrast, you are longing for the opposite. If it's very, very cold, you are wanting it to be somewhat warmer. But when it is warm, 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 it's nice that it becomes cooler. So no contrast is better than the other. They are the same necessary. Sometimes Martinus asks the question, do you have any ideas how you could improve the universe? How could you improve the eternally existing universe? But Martinus, with all his analysis, shows that you cannot construct universe in a better way than that it has been constructed. But most people would say, then I want to take away crimes, I want to take away illnesses and so on. But then you are removing consequently one part of one contrast. And then it would also be weaker. If you can become very, very, very unhappy, you can also become very, 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 very happy. If you only can get a little bit unhappy, you can only get a little bit happy. So Martinus thinks if you removes one contrast, the other would also disappear and life would be much poorer. There would be lesser possibilities to experience life. But what is the point also of my lecture? That is, seen from one point of view, there is only two living beings. It is the individual being, and then it is the surrounding living being. God is a living being. The whole eternal, infinite universe is a living being. That's the same for all living beings. And where your own energies are getting into contact with the contact, in contact with the energies of the surroundings, there is a reaction. And this reaction is my experience of life. So that is also a main point in Martinus cosmology. Whenever we make an experience, this is a living correspondence with life, with universe, or with God. That is really inspiring to me. God, or the universe, speaks to you in every single experience that you have.
And Martinus talks also about us being able to speak to the universe or God in the form of prayer. And he's written a little book called The Mystery of Prayer, where he describes prayer as a science.
Yeah.
How would you unite those two terms, prayer and science?
Yeah. Martinus has written this little book, as you say, Prayer is Science. And I would say the first 8 chapters, you could call them Prayer is Science. because Martinus shows what is possible and what is not possible with prayers. For example, if the Englishmen are praying to win the world championship in football, and the American, the Danish, the Germans are to win the world championship, you cannot, there's only one set of gold medals, so it's impossible to fulfill all prayers. But to put it very short, when you have a prayer that is an advantage for the wholeness, when it is an advantage for the whole existing universe, when it's an advantage for God, such a prayer can be fulfilled. If you have a prayer, you want something to happen that would be a disadvantage for the universe, a disadvantage for God, that would be the same as a slow suicide for the universe or for God. So for that reason that... I have a simple example. If I'm going for a long walk, I'm training to some marathon walk, then it hurts in my knee. And then Martinus explains the cells, the micro-individuals are living beings. And when it hurts in my knee, it's a prayer. It's a collective prayer. They are praying to me for help. So I should stop walking. But why should I help them? Well, I could help them because it would be an advantage for me to help my micro-individuals. And in the same way, I dare to say that God is also such an egoist, because God will only fulfill prayers that are an advantage for the universe. So if prayers that are against the laws of nature, that are against the way the universe is functioning, then that would be a destruction of the universe. And it's not Martinus' points in 4 points, but I also like to put it in 4 points, that the prayer is an advantage for natural people. There was also a Danish biologist who wondered why all people in the nature have religions. And then he, with a Darwinistic expression, said that there must have been a benefit in the survival, the struggle for existence, in the survival of the fittest, because otherwise all natural people wouldn't be religious. Because if they are all religious and they are still living, it must have had an advantage to be religious. And he,
and by natural people you mean indigenous peoples,
yes, exactly,
old tribes and so on.
Yes, yes, that's what I mean. But he also says even with the fundamentalistic religious people, they also have what he calls a religious instinct. And you often hear expressions, that's true because it's written in the Bible, it's true because that's written in the Quran and so on. So he says religion is based on instinct and feelings. So it's not based on science, but it works. And prayer is not invented by priests or religious people. It is a natural instinct in the animal kingdom. And still, if people believe fundamentally, they also have quite a lot of religious instinct. And that is what Martinus talks about in this book of prayer, that your conversation with the universe, your talk to the universe, should be an intellectual process. So Martinus says that the prayer is developing. At the end, the prayer would be a conscious talk, a conscious speak with God. And but it has had a very big advantage. And he says that the beast of prey, when they are attacked by animals, by lions and tigers, they are screaming. And that's the first kind of prayer. And in the first prayer, you're screaming for help to yourself. But at a higher level, on a second, you can pray for getting life power, life force to take your problems, to take your illness and so on, so you can get a lot of drinks. And Martinus very often in his lectures talks about people should just know what a big gift that prayer is. It's a fantastic gift to human beings. You can get so much power and energy. And at a higher level, you can also use your prayer if you are in a very difficult situation to find the best solution. I often take a simple explanation. There is a married couple, and then the husband shows up that he has been unfaithful 7 years, and now he wants to leave the marriage and marry with a new woman. And of course, the wife is very sad for that, but she could also pray, I want the best solution of this very difficult situation. And she could even pray, I want the best solution, even if it is uncomfortable for me, even if one of the three of us should have a suffering, I prefer that I'm the one who is suffering and not the others. And then Martinus says that you can get an enormous power from the spiritual world, and then it's not difficult for a guardian angel to put the right idea into your head. And Martinus has also written this little article called Gethsemane, where Jesus is in the Garden of Olives. It is on Thursday before he was crucified on Friday. And it is a model of a prayer that Martinus says that you can pray to what you want, what is good for you to happen. But if you add, but thou will be done, not mine, then you would never be disappointed. And Jesus, he was praying to not to be crucified, let this cup pass me. And then he said, but not my, but thou will be done. Then the woman in this, the wife, could also ask, let me get my husband back, but thou will, not mine, will be done. And then you can get an enormous power. And Martinus is also talking about mental sovereignty. And that is a very high step in evolution. And Jesus had this very high step in evolution, mental sovereignty. We are not there, but we are on our way to this. And Jesus, he showed this mental sovereignty, even if he with 9 hours torture was killed, he could still pray for his those who tortured him. And that is mental sovereignty. Then it doesn't matter what happens. Then you have your equilibrium. Then you are in balance. Then you are balanced. But you could also train this mental sovereignty through this kind of prayer. But then there is even a fourth level of prayer. You would think you cannot get any higher. But he says the ultimate purpose of the prayer is just simple conversation with God, that you can talk with God as a friend. Some of my friends says, my wife don't understand me, but my comrades, my friends, they understand me. And there are women who says, my husband don't understand me, but my friends understand me. But at the end, you can have talked so much to God that you feel that God is understanding you better than any other human being. And of course, it's very good to have a good relation to all relations. I think it's inspiring with environmental protection. And of course, we should not have any toxic compounds in the nature, and everything should be pure and clean and so on. But then in the mental way, you should have the same attitude. I don't want any toxic compounds in my surroundings. But if you are angry with somebody, if there's crisis and problems and so on, then there is a kind of pollution. So the ultimate environmental protection also in the spiritual area would be that you improve your relationship to God and that you can talk with God about everything. And the purpose of the eternal life is that you eternally shall be able to experience something. And you can only be an eternal being if you can experience something new for eternity. So a condition for eternal life is that you have access to both contrasts for eternity.
Thank you very much, Ole. I think we will round off here. And thank you for sharing your thoughts about the meaning of life and about what cosmology is and about the science of prayer. Thank you very much.